Okay. I don't know how much of a lead-in that gave it. I physically turned it over before it did it itself. And hopefully this is side B and not upside down and backwards when you get it in your tape machine. It's still November the 14th. It's a little after 11:30. Guess that figures. Took me 45 minutes to do it. I mean, 45 minute tape takes you 45 minutes to do it. It also takes you 45 minutes to hear it. That's why it's so inferior for a busy person, unless you can listen to them while you're driving, something like that. compared to a letter, which you can scan. I've got a bunch of drivel in it. Well, you can skip it. You can scan it fast. You can read a letter much faster than you can listen to a tape. Anyhow, now let's see. We got the disabled story here. And boy, I seem to be winding down myself. We've sort of got the bare bones of the possum story. We got a pussycat taking a monumental bath on my lap. And what was that other thing? Well, the $800 dent. Well, probably have to boil that one down when we see what the outcome is. Where I may have left off on the other tape, earlier this afternoon when I was at Denny's, was how really upset this former sponsor of mine was when I told her what was going on with this small accident. She was just horrified that I was going to let this young woman get off without being charged with being a uninsured driver, uninsured motorist. Well, I told her dad that he was going to have to, you know, really lean, you know, really try to get it through her head, and that this accident was a gift. It's very serious to be uninsured in California, or anywhere for that matter. Either, you know, have enough money to put up for to guarantee an accident, or, and that's not available to most of us peasants. And anymore, the cop can stop you. I mean, if he stops you, and he won't stop you just for that, but if he stops you and asks you if you have insurance and you can't show some kind of proof that you do, some kind of a receipt, why, it can be a misdemeanor. If you end up in an accident and you can't pay, well, in the first place, you're going to be lose your license for a year. You're going to have to prove that you have insurance for 3 years after that, and you're going to be seriously inconvenienced. Not to mention what's kind of crap you can get into if we've got seriously damaged people. And boy, I never wished more that the no-fault thing could have passed. Although I almost voted no on everything. Probably one of the few that voted for the 104. Because I figured that's what the insurance companies wanted. It would bring down the rates. It would get at some of the causes of the high rates. And now with Prop 103 passing, it's instantly being contested in the courts as not constitutional. And a number of the companies are threatening to move out of California. So far, ever since the past, people that are out of insurance or trying to renew insurance are stuck out there in limbo. I don't know whether they've got that resolved yet or not. Anyway, this lady was real upset with me and said I was not being kind. And this poor girl should learn the hard way and so forth. Well, maybe so, but she's going to have to learn on someone besides me because I'm already committed to this course of action. If it was over 500, and I had to report it, therefore I had to report it to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and then there would be no hope for it because I'm not willing to lie. I think that's where I left the other tape. If I'm going to lie, if I have to lie for survival, I more specialize in lies of omission than lies of commission because I'm not worth shit at that. You know, tell you a bald-faced lie to your face. Try to deal with cops or insurance investigators. Besides which, I can't keep that many wrong facts in my head. I am very much like my mother in that respect. My mother was very literal. I think one of the major differences between my mother and myself was that the poor lady did not have a sense of humor regarding herself. And that's kind of fatal. I think about the worst thing that could happen to you in life is to not have a sense of humor about yourself. Guaranteed you will become mentally ill at some point if your life gets too damn difficult. And a person like me can probably laugh their way into and out of an institution if they had to. Oh, funny cat here. I wouldn't want to have to. But anyway, mother was very literal, drove people crazy with her literalness. And I mainly get very literal when I'm under pressure, terrific pressure. This may be on tape somewhere. I just can't do that. Not only for the, you know, on the surface of it, it was very tempting, and I told her I would. They've got, you know, like the poor man says, he's got thousands of dollars of insurance. He's got 4 kids, 5 cars, and thousands of dollars of insurance on all this wife and underage, young, teenage and whatever kids. So he cannot possibly see. I don't know whether it makes any difference that he's from outside this culture. I don't know whether that matters or not. As a man with a large family who works 16 hours a day with his store, he doesn't understand why one of his children has let the insurance lapse on the car that he assigned, that he let her use, so long as she kept up the insurance payments. Why he can't use another car that is. And I said, well, I tried to explain it to him today. I said it could be very, very easily interpreted as intent to defraud. And by that I mean that maybe I had run into the side of a wall all by myself. Because you had an insured car, you were going to take care of it for me. That wouldn't make a lot of sense, would it? I don't know. But anyway, it could look that way. It could look like a set-up job. And meanwhile, a different insurance company is picking up the tab on it. But I see his point of view too, but I can't do it. Show you how tired I've gotten over the years that I could even entertain the fact that I could. But when you get used to doing desperate things for survival, you get into that mode. Last 3 years have been a fight for some kind of survival on an emotional level, stress level. I'm thinking here a minute. I re-listened to what I have here so far on side B. I think that my fanatical adherence to the honest and the legal, not that I was any pure Simon Pure person before that, but I was raised by a mother who was quite fanatical about being honest. yes. Yeah, it was the chortle of the century here. and she was. She was very honest, checkbook honest. She was a bookkeeper primarily. Teaching made her crazy and she had to quit. She got charged with beating up some kid that she said she didn't. And, wait a minute. Put my volume to a different point here. Probably go up and down here. You know, she said she didn't, and she said it 100,000 times, and so, and I believed her. I just thought it was strange she kept harping on it. And then when I tumbled into my own little snake pit of memories when I was 42 years old, well, she probably did beat the kid up. When she was a teacher, you could practically half beat a kid to death and not get fired for it. You know, corporal punishment was quite acceptable when my mother was a teacher. But, so, I mean, you had to seriously damage a kid. And, anyway, she didn't have the nervous temperament for teaching kids, and she was primarily a bookkeeper, and she was very fanatically honest about all money matters. And as I was being raised by her as a child, I assumed honest about everything, you know. So I tried to do that. I really did try to do that. And shit. Oh God. Till I tumbled into my own little snake pit of memories, as I said. And I was in a period of rage there for several years. And over the matter, this love affair I had going with my black sheep alcoholic uncle, anywhere from age six to, well, from age six to whenever, maybe 10, maybe 12, maybe 14. And Uncle Nelson stole to get his booze. He did what every rock-bottom alcoholic will do, an addicted person will do when it gets that bad, when they're that bad off. He'd sell one of grandmother's blouses for $5 to get a bottle. And his older brother would come along and have to buy it back for $100 or something like that, back when you could buy a plow for $100. And I suppose that's at least $1,000 now. That was one thing. Emotional part of me loved my uncle very much, still does. He was one real thing in my childhood, no matter how damn bad it got, and it pretty got pretty damn bad. But And for some perverse reason, I, for a long time in my mind, you know, as I worked with this, I was much more forgiving of my uncle for the sexual thing than my mother for the sexual thing. And, well, and the rampant hypocrisy in the whole damn family. And I guess that's just a fact of living. You know, God, it's hard. It's really hard to live your life without being a hypocrite in some way in this society. And it's very hard to not be judgmental. I get very judgmental about judgmental people. And, man, you know, it's hard. My mother came straight out of a super Victorian family. And all of the horror that the sexual repression of that day caused. And I don't know which is worse, frankly. The hypocrisy and the craziness that sexual repression causes, or the penalties of promiscuity and total sexual license. There's not a whole lot to choose from between those two ends of pendulum, where there's no responsibility with the sex and no love. Well, anyhow, I'm diverging all over the damn joint. So anyhow, by the time I was 42, of course, I had done a number of things I wasn't proud of, mostly in the sexual area. But I had been cash register honest. You know, and a law is a law, and I had not broken the speed limit. Yeah, I was, you know, I was a very law-abiding person, other than the fact that I was a lesbian. Which, well, too bad about that. But in that period, which I referred to briefly on the first tape of this November series of 1988, maybe part of that was in the 1987, June 1987 is on the first of that tape, but I don't think so, because I was still taping while I drove, and pretty hard to do that anymore. More normal I get. Too dangerous. I don't, my mind isn't flying. The thing is, my mind is not flying all over the landscape so that I can use the taping machine as a device to hold down one core of it. I can use my eyes and brain as a scanner. So much of driving is automatic. You do have to be aware of what's going on around you. But, of course, the weller I get, the more impossible that becomes. And, anyway, in that period of from 1967, well, was somewhere about 1967, I think, that I got with the second counselor, and that was where we started getting at the real memories instead of just the symbolic reincarnation fantasy type memories. And I was going down that freeway, I kid you not, at 100 miles an hour. Fortunately, I didn't do it very often, but I did it enough. I'm just lucky as hell. And so were the rest of the landscape. There was a fury in me at that time that, shit, I was covered with shit. I wasn't an honest person. My whole fucking life was a lie. And at that time, I didn't see that it was ever going to be anything but one monumental lie. Came from a respectable family. As respectable as it gets, except for their one poor little black sheep guy. And that got very interesting, too. Because while Uncle Nelson was a bootlegger, during the Depression, during Prohibition, and up until it was repealed, the good, God-fearing, church-going people bought their booze from him. That was when this country got involved with the mob and the racketeers by making alcohol illegal, totally illegal. They didn't have more than a little bitty toehold before that, and that gave them the whole ball game. And then when we switched that off, I mean, they had such a foothold that when we switched that off, then they headed straight for drugs. Is their income of choice illegal drugs? We never learn. So, I'm flying down the freeway at 100 miles an hour. I had a car that would do it. It had a Buick Special. It was a beautiful car. I had bought used when it was in good condition. I'd had it all fixed up. And this repressed masculine side of myself had been trampled on all of its life. It was going, let me out, let me out, let me out, let me show you what I can do. And I'd start to go to visit my mother. Or I would leave the institution whereat I had visited her. And when I'd hit that freeway, I'd be going 90 miles an hour plus. Car had a maximum speed to it of 110. Whole new world opened up to me during that short period. Scared, of course, scared Sandy out of her wits. Poor baby. When she learned of it, became aware of it, I would leave that damn hospital in Norwalk and get home in 15 minutes on a drive that would normally take a half an hour to 45 minutes. And I could see the thrill that sports drivers get. My God. You know, I tried to keep it in those days. I had the semblance of responsibility left in case axle broke or something broke and the car went out of control. I would take it off of the off the right hand edge of the road. But getting up to that speed, I might hit all four or five lanes, whatever. And it was like a whole different viewpoint of life. And I was driving like a teenage boy, was what I was driving like. Or a teenage girl who's free to express her whole self negatively and positively in action. And I never had been free to. Boy, I was such a good kid. I squeaked. And my mother still told me I was driving her crazy and was going to be her death. Oh, God, boy. I think the worst thing I did as a little kid was to climb trees and whistle. My grandmother, you know, had this old country saying, whistling girl and a crowing hen always come to some bad end. Sure enough. And I got into all the rage about, well, I finally got out of the speeding mode. My adult or whatever responsible side of my head knew that, where was it? I guess it was at some point that I realized that I could possibly kill other people. There have been those who said, you were suicidal. Well, possibly. Not really. But it didn't give a damn. It didn't give a damn. And but it wasn't until the day that I realized that I might take a bunch of people with me that I thought, oh Christ, I can't. I would not survive that if I severely damaged and or killed people because of my own irresponsible, my own emotional problems. So anyhow, got the car back under control. Got John's foot off the pedal. Oh my God, Morgan, let me tell you about my characters. I may have on some tape that you've got, you may have heard it before, but I'll try it again for the update. When I found these little undeveloped cells, these two little dead pieces of my emotional nature, they were little five-year-old kids, twins, a boy and a girl, and I named the girl Elizabeth after my grandmother. It's also my middle name, whom I had revered as a child and all my life, really. She was a pioneer lady and lived a hard life. And named the boy John after my favorite, both Jesus's beloved disciple, John, and also John Agee, who was a tenant farmer on the land, and who lived a hard life, and caught rabbit fever one season, skinning a rabbit that had an infectious disease, nearly died of it. He was a good hunter. A good farmer, young man. That structure in that part of the South, and I never realized or thought emotionally of Kentucky being the South until I got into all these traumatic type memories of my childhood. My conscious knowledge of Kentucky was quite intellectual and structured by the books that I had read. I was in and out of the Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky culture, so-called respectable Eastern Kentucky culture, so often, be there a few months, be there a school semester, be back to California for a couple of years, be back there for either a summer vacation or a few more months or another semester. And I lost my whole fifth year there because I got sick from all the stress. The thing with my uncle and the thing with my mother, and I just got sick and I didn't get well until she brought me back to California. And that took care of the fifth grade. Put me back. I had been jumped ahead earlier in California because I could read well. It was very difficult. So losing the fifth grade in Kentucky, I ended up graduating when I was 18 the way I was supposed to instead of 17, which I might have And I'll say one thing for my mother. She went down to school and fought for me and tried to keep them from jumping me ahead when I was in the second grade because I could read good. Because I've been trained in Kentucky. The illiterate state of the nation. God, what a bunch of hockey puck. Schools were better. The schools I went to in Kentucky were better than the public schools out here. Even though the public schools were very good, nevertheless, they were not as strict, and they weren't academically oriented. The school I went to was. So, second grade out here, I'm way ahead on reading and way behind on math. I mean, God damn, I was flunking second grade math there. It was terrifying, scary. And my mother was an academic and literary person as well as an illiterate person. And the whole family of the whole Cornelison clan was educated bunch of farmers. And my mother's mother and her husband, my mother's father, wanted to make it possible for their children to go to college if they wanted to. Boys and girls both. They had three boys and three girls. So, I got back to the fifth grade back here and did it all over again. And finally got math nailed down to where I ended up being a math major, math art major in high school. And math public speaking major at Cal Berkeley. But till I get bored, I'd take a math course. I ended up tutoring girls up at Cal in my dorm because they'd been brainwashed to believe that only boys were good at math. Bunch of shit. And because I'd had such a hard time with math myself and am a slow learner, I mean all my grades came hard to me. I got good grades, but I had to study all night to get them. I would have flunked geometry in high school if I hadn't been not a socially popular, had no social skills worth a damn, except I like people, and basically, but socially a loner, and not popular with the boys, and so consequently I had the time to study all night, otherwise I would have flunked geometry cold. Algebra was easy for me in Kentucky, and geometry nearly wiped me out in California. Two totally different kinds of math. And I loved it when I got to trigonometry where we got to put algebra and geometry together. That was great. Just beautiful. But I'm not a theoretical math type person. I like the application of math. I like the practical application of it. And I didn't get a sound enough basis in analytical geometry to get a good grounding in calculus. I had a terrible time with calculus in college when I got down to UCLA. Anyway, some honesty. Topic is honesty. I got a tape at Religious Science Church here Sunday that I had meant to read before I got out on the landscape today, and unfortunately I didn't. But the title, I mean, it's a two-set Tara Singh, man who's done a lot of work in the Course in Miracles thing. But anyway, the titles were Pathway to Your Life's Work, and forget what the title of the first one was, which didn't turn me on, but the title of the second one did, and that was Honesty Ends Helplessness. And I just sort of rode on the truth of that. I could almost go into a whole thing like, the less honest I get, the more paralyzed I get. It all ties up. It's really exciting insight, which I may have known at one time and forgotten or something. Because, as I say, from 42 on, for several years, or probably almost five, it was so difficult getting these new memories integrated. It's like having a mind split. You had conscious memories of what you thought it was like, and you had to plug in these new memories that fit the missing spaces. Well, you didn't know there'd been any missing spaces, except for the fact that your life didn't make any sense. Life made sense with the new information, but it was very hard to integrate. And meanwhile, I did all kinds of quaint and wonderful and colorful things. Some legal and some not so, like speeding down the freeway. And got into a bunch of sexual immorality during that period. Which, however, one thing I know to be a truth is that it's better to charge ahead making mistakes than it is to stand still to the point that you get paralyzed. You just cannot correct something like that. If you're not willing to put your paw out there, for better or worse, why, there's just no hope, because so afraid of making a mistake, you go into paralysis, and you may be perfect, but pure and perfect, but you ain't worth shit, nevertheless. Either way. So, honesty ends helplessness. And that was the way I tackled the situation today on this car thing, and them wanting me to lie about which of their cars hit me and what that would lead to in my tiny mind, which has enough trouble hanging on to the so-called lowercase realities of this strange, wonderful life on this planet. We seek truth with a capital T. It was my God all my life, and when I got all of this lowercase truth, I thought, you really got to be careful what you wish for, what you strive for. I can only say I must have needed all of that God-awful truth, or I wouldn't have got it. On the other hand, I think that some people could probably live their whole lives without it. Your mind forgets all that shit for a damn good reason. I have met people since in various groups, like in the incest survivors and in the adult children of alcoholic parents and in the codependent anonymous people. All those people that lived in, were raised in dysfunctional families of one sort or another, and denial was the first rule. Back to denial. Denial of what was going on in the house. Whether it be that daddy was drinking and beating up mommy, or whether it be that daddy was sleeping with whatever one of his girl or boy children that were handy. tends to get people pretty crazy, and the ones that survive. Well, there's different ways of surviving. But one way to survive is by forgetting and doing the best you can. Until somewhere in your middle years, the world starts to fall apart on you and you don't know why. Because you've given it your whole best shot, it wasn't enough. Okay, it's a few minutes left. I'm real glad you're enjoying your karate classes. I can imagine all kinds of good things coming out of that. I don't know whether you needed that assurance of self-defense, you know, per se. I don't know whether your main motivation is to stay fit or be able to defend yourself in a crisis or what, but I know that the kind of self-confidence that brings is very valuable to a person. To not feel helpless. I started to say, I've run into people in these various anonymous groups, of which I only go to AA now, and that not enough. Where it seems, and also in my reading, it seems as though the people who are free to remember, I thought that would be a good thing, not necessarily. People who are free to remember all along are in serious trouble with being able to stay in the family. And the girls, well, the boys too for that matter, frequently end up being prostitutes for part of their life because, I mean, they're full of conscious rage and they know what they're mad about. I didn't. And I was stuck with all these great, honest, motherhood, God, and country type ideals, and honesty, and truth, and beauty. And that got very hilarious when I was 42. Anyway. This poor young gal of 19 that maybe being spoiled by her father and mother and incidentally me. I'm sorry about that. I sort of struggling over here for my own survival. And I didn't have any kids. God was good. Didn't have any kids. And I just find it impossible to be judgmental about this young woman who didn't pay her automobile insurance. For whatever damn reason. She didn't have it. She's going to school, this and that. She may be coming from a totally different point of the compass than I am for letting my bills lapse when I have money in the bank, but the potential outcome is the same. And so anyhow, well, Before I hit the end of this tape, I better say goodbye and love and stuff. It's now 12:30. It's the morning of November the 15th, 1988.